help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Suzanne from the Freedom Through Acceptance Group in Ringgoes, New Jersey.
Hi, my name is Suzanne. I am an alcoholic. And yes, I'm from Ringgoes Freedom Through Acceptance. We have a very clappy group. We clap for everything. And if I go someplace where they don't clap, I'm usually the only one that's clapping. So my sobriety date is February 8th, 2010. My home group is Ringgoes Freedom Through Acceptance. I love my home group. And I feel like those three words, freedom through acceptance, is like my story. I gained freedom from my sickness through my acceptance of who and what I am. My sponsor is the Annie P. She's right here. I adore her, and we talk a lot. I know her sponsor, so I can tell on her. And I know Patty's sponsor, and I know Patty's sponsor, Deb. And I love AA, and I love how it works. And a really good day for me is when I'm sitting in the women's meeting in Frenchtown that gets together on Saturdays at 8:30 in the morning, and if they're all there, and I'm there too, I really happen to think that that's really cool. So, you know, if you don't talk to your sponsor, find one that you can. In my short year, 8 years of sobriety, I've had six or so. I've had Annie the longest. It took me a while, to stick with someone. But my first sponsor, I adored, and she started taking me through the steps, and she went to Hazleton. To start a career in drug and alcohol counseling. I can tell you a sad story about her, and that is that she copped a big, big resentment. And I just spoke to her a couple of months ago, and she said to me, Suzanne, the disease is alive and well. She was being driven to a treatment facility. She relapsed. And after her, I met my next sponsor in a parking lot, and her name was Cinnamon. And I had to start the steps all over again because we don't get to decide how we get to know each other. We go through the steps, a sponsor, sponsee, and that's how we get to know each other. So I had to start steps all over again. And so Cinnamon took me all the way through the steps, and Cinnamon and I weren't really getting along that well, and actually I called Annie's sponsor, Patty, and I needed a new sponsor. I felt like I needed a new sponsor, and so I'm calling Patty up, and I knew Patty couldn't be my sponsor because she actually sponsored Cinnamon, and I knew enough. I had a lot of junk I had to dump about Cinnamon, but I knew Patty was a safe woman for me to talk to, so I called her up, and I was surprised at what Patty said to me. She said to me, you don't know how to take care of yourself. And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, go stand in front of Cinnamon and you tell her that you think you need a new sponsor and you listen to what she says. And I said, yes, ma'am, I can do that. And so I lived with Cinnamon at the time. I can tell you, I don't think that's a good idea, but I was living with my sponsor. And she was coming down the steps and I was going up the steps. And I said, Cinnamon, I think I need a new sponsor. And she agreed. She agreed. And I got my next sponsor. And this woman, I was listening to her. She had relapsed a couple of times, and she was up there getting her 90-day coin. And I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, this is a strong woman. She's got something I want. And I asked her to be my sponsor. And we're going through steps again. And I thought I was preparing to review some step work with her, and I get to this diner to sit down with her, and she says to me, I don't think I'm being of enough service to you. I can't be your sponsor anymore. And so I sat there, and we had breakfast, and I went out in my car, and I said to myself, oh, my goodness, that's God doing for me what I could not do for myself, because the truth of the matter was I wasn't really using her. She said a couple of things to me that I didn't really like, And so I didn't really like going to her. And I had a couple more sponsors, and now I'm with Annie, and I adore her, and we talk on a regular basis. And I tell that story because I used to sit in meetings and listen to women who had like 20 some odd years of sobriety, and they'd say, "And I've had my same sponsor the whole time." And I used to sit there and think to myself, "What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? That's not my story. I've had a lot of sponsors." But, you know, it worked for me that way. And honestly, I can say that I wasn't running from any one of those ladies. I wasn't afraid to do the work. I wanted to do the work because I was staying away from alcohol long enough that I was really starting to feel good, and I wanted to do the work. But so I'm thankful that I didn't waste a lot of time when I was without sponsor. I got another sponsor as quickly as I could. I happen to think it's real important to have other, you know, sober women in my life, because this isn't rocket science. Like, there's people that have done this before me and they've done it successfully. So, like, if I want what they have, I just have to do what they do. So what it was like, I was one of seven. I am one of seven. My mom and dad were alcoholics. They raised seven alcoholic children. And our house was crazy. And I, you know, suffered a lot of trauma and chaos in my life and was never really taught how to take care of myself. My mother, you know, none of us were. We all had to sort of like fend for ourselves. And do you want this? It says restricted. And so my mother was one that was like, you know, we would go to her and tell her we didn't feel good or a bone was sticking out of our arm, and she would say, "Put Vaseline on it, everything is going to be okay." And so, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of nurturing, and you know, we were like a pack of wild wolves. There were seven of us, and you know, she did what she could. You know, they did the best that they could, but we didn't have a lot. We lived in a house that wasn't heated, and you know, we had a kerosene heater. That was nice. You could lay around that and get warm, or the oven door was open. You could, you know, stand on the door with your feet and get warm that way. That was nice. And so, you know, at a really young age, I started, you know, I was just trying to do things to get out of myself. I smoked cigarettes at a really young age. I smoked Lucky Strike non-filters because that's what my dad smoked. I probably started smoking in fourth grade. I drank at a really young age. I was the type of kid, girl, I was thinking about this today. I don't even know what I was doing that far away from my house, but I was all the way up the street, Broad Street, up at Church Street. I know you don't know the area, or maybe you do, but I was up there with a friend, and we were running around a bush. I can even tell you the name of the older boy that was running around the bush after us. I was probably like 8 or 9. And in my head, the song that's running through my head was the David Cassidy song, "I Think I Love You." You know that song? And that's the way I thought. That's the way, I mean, I didn't even know this person. And because he's running around the tree after us, I'm thinking that I'm in love with this person. I would go across the street and steal cookies from the pantry of the, you know, the family that lived across the street. They had it, we didn't, I wanted it. And, you know, I would go over, take a whole sleeve of cookies and bring them back to my house and eat them. And I didn't really see much wrong with this. You know, they were cookies, but, you know, I was taking care of myself. I had an urge, I had a desire, whatever. I went and I got it, and you know, I did what I thought I needed to do in order to bring you know, happiness into my life. So drinking at a really young age. And I can't, I probably got into about 5 different car accidents. The worst one I got into, I snapped a telephone pole and sent the girl that was sitting in the passenger seat through the window. And she was in Huntington Medical Center in a coma for over a month. And I can tell you that during that time, I never once asked about her. You know, I cared about one thing and one thing only, and that was me. And now the fact that I didn't have a car, you know, it's not good times. As a young girl, when I would walk to first grade on Main Street in Flemington, I would see the people hanging out there, and I would say that that's what I wanted to do. Those were the people that were of interest to me. I wanted to hang out on Main Street with these were the, and these I know today because I did get to hang out with them, but these are the people that drank and did drugs. And I was 6 years old walking to first grade, and this was what I had planned for myself. That's what looked appealing to me. I graduated high school early and went off with a friend to Maryland and, you know, set about doing not much of anything at all, sitting around, you know, drinking beer, smoking pot. My poor mother didn't even know, you know, where I was. I didn't think enough to clue her in on what I was doing. And eventually, that friend of mine, Lynn, and I, we decided to hitchhike back from Maryland. We did cop a ride from a really, today when we talk about it, we talk about how unusual this individual was that actually picked us up. And we're, you know, we're thankful that we're here today, that, you know, nothing really bad happened to us during that car ride. So, you know, I went away to college, Ryerson Polytechnical Institute in Canada. It was a dance. They taught us the Royal Academy syllabus. So I did ballet, tap, modern dance, jazz. I could, you know, do toe. And what I got really good at there was drinking Labatt's Blue. It was in Canada. And I got really good at drinking Labatt's Blue, and I came home probably after like 5 or 6 months, and then hooked up with some people that, you know, weren't really making much of their life. We worked at Presco Foods, which was, you know, a plant that processed spices and stuff. And when we got out of work, there was, you know, one focus, and that was drinking. My girlfriend Terry liked to do Quaaludes, and, you know, we did whatever. We drank and we did drugs. One time, we were out in the woods by Raritan River, and I can't even tell you what I was doing, because that's whatever you had, I did. And I blacked out and started just careening down towards the river. And this guy grabbed my foot and stopped me right before I actually went into the river. So I'm like on this path of destruction. And I meet this person, and I can tell you the first time that I met him, I didn't like him. I wasn't really that interested in him. But then the second time I met him, the truth is that after a while, this guy and I got married. And while for the first 5 years of our marriage, we did a lot of drinking and a lot of drugging. And I got pregnant with my first son, and I didn't even know I was pregnant. I went into the doctors, and I wasn't feeling well, and the doctor said, "Do you think you could be pregnant?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And we took a pregnancy test, and I was pregnant. What I say now is that it was God's grace, because I for the next 15, 16 years of my life, I didn't smoke cigarettes. I didn't drink coffee. I definitely didn't drink. I raised not only that child, but another child. I had two kids. It kills me when I think about it, but I understand today that because I removed the alcohol and drugs from my life doesn't make me this person that's able to be a mother, be a wife. In fact, you know, I really didn't do that well at all. I can remember the first time I hit my son, my son who's now 24. And it brought me to my knees because I was like, oh my God, I'm a hitter. Like, and I didn't want to be a hitter. You know, who wants to hit their kid? I guess the good news is that I witnessed myself do it and I was aware of it and I started talking about it. They're now 16 and 15, and I'm realizing that they don't need me the way they used to. And I'm looking at myself, and I'm saying to myself, oh, like, I don't like what I see when I look, you know, right here. I don't like what I see when I look back there. I don't like what I see when I look out there. And I think it's a really good idea for me to tell my husband that I don't want to be with him anymore and that I want a divorce. And my truth is that I was married to that man for 22 years and I didn't even love him. But it was easier to stay with him than it was to do anything about it. So here I am and I'm telling this poor guy that I don't want to be married to him anymore. And the first thing that I do is I turn to alcohol. And I go out to a bar and I have one drink. And I remember walking out of the bar and saying to myself, yeah, I got this. Like, I got this. I can drink. And the next night, I go to the same bar, and I have a drink, and I leave, and I'm feeling really great. The third day, I go, and I have two drinks. The fourth day, I'm up to three drinks. The fifth day, I'm now trying to figure out, well, what other bars can I go to? I can go here and have a couple. I'll go there and have a couple. I'm now up to four bars a night, and I'm thinking about maybe I should get down to Char, which is closer to Somerville, because, like, I'm single, and I'm drinking, and I'm all that, and then some. And then I heard this term, cougar. Like, I don't even know what it means, but that's what I thought I was. And I thought I needed to get down there because there might be the next, you know, the next right man might be down there. And, you know, because I don't know how to take care of myself, I'm now drinking because that's what I do. I'm now drinking to blackout. I'm going into work drunk. I'm waking up and I don't even know, like, where I am. Which means I'm getting in my car, driving to get home, to get ready to go to work. And I run into a guy in a parking lot. And this guy gives me his number. And, like, I know that the reason why he's giving me his number is because I'm all that and then some. But what I find out is that my father sponsored him for the first 5 years of his sobriety. And he knew I was hurting. And he gives me his number. And he says, give me a call. So I let like about a week go by, and I call up George, and I say, I need help. And he starts taking me around to meetings and telling me what women to look for. And I'm going into these meetings, and Julie, my very first sponsor, was one of the first women he told me. And I'm going up, and I'm shaking her hand. Hi, Julie. George told me to say hi. And then I would just stand there, like I didn't know, you know, I didn't know what to do. So I'm going around and I'm going to these meetings and I'm crying at every meeting because I don't want to stop drinking. And I go walking across the street one day from my house because I never would have done that because I didn't want anyone to see me walking into that church. Like, you wouldn't understand that there might be something wrong with me when I'm parking my Jeep up on the hill, or my jewelry's on the, you know, outside on our hill, or I'm passed out on my front lawn. Like, you wouldn't be able to put two and two together to figure out that there might be something wrong with me, and I wouldn't want you to see me walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But I'm walking across the street this one day, and it's a beautiful day, and I'm walking across the street, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. I think I'm okay. The sun is shining. I feel really great. And I go into that meeting, and I'm crying because I don't know what else to do. And after the meeting, this guy comes up to me, and he goes, do you remember when you girls were young? And I don't know what the hell he's going to say, but I know I was pissed off at him because he said to me, are you Ray Mills' daughter? And I said, yes. And I'm like all indignant. Well, there's my anonymity. Like, I even knew what that meant, right? I just pissed off. And he said, a bunch of us old alcoholics got together trying to figure out how we can save our young kids, because that girl, Brenda, was sitting up in that hospital in a coma. And I'm standing there, and I'm looking at him. It's like a slap or a punch in my face, because I had the balls to walk into that meeting thinking I wasn't an alcoholic. I had completely forgotten about that. From the time I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, from February to April, I never once thought about the fact that I got into that car accident and put that girl in the hospital and in a coma for a month. And I just stood there, and I looked at him, and I said, geez, Eddie, thank you so much. I was the person who was driving that car. And then what happens for me is that I want to go to a woman's meeting. Like, I think I need to get to a woman's meeting. I'm still without a sponsor. And I call up Julie, and I say to Julie, Jules, I really want to go to this woman's meeting, but I don't want any of those people bothering me. Can I tell them that you are my sponsor? And she said, you want to lie? And I said, yeah, I want to lie. Like, yeah, that's easy, right? And she said, well, do you want me to be your sponsor? And I said, sure. And she said, okay, call me tomorrow. And she also told me that I wasn't allowed to speak in meetings until I had 90 days. So I called Julie the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that. And because I'm so selfish, sometimes I call her 5 or 6 times in a day because I don't know what the bleep to do with myself. And I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, today I understand, like, these are my first acts of ever doing anything responsible in my whole life. I'm trying to take care of myself. I don't even know it, and I'm calling this woman. And by her telling me not to speak during my first 90 meetings, what it did was ensure that I did call her, because I'd sit there in these meetings, and I had all these grand ideas about how things could be done differently, or this one pissed me off, or that's not right, and I would call her up, and I would tell her. And then we started working on the steps. And, you know, today I know I need the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to protect me from myself. Without the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, this alcoholic, with my back up against the wall, if I'm not practicing a program, I'm going to drink and I'm going to do drugs. And there's no question in my mind about it, because I've heard it. I've heard it here in these rooms over and over again. And everything I know about myself today and how to take care of myself, I learned in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that I'll forget if I don't come to meetings. I remember one time calling my sponsor up and saying to her, you know, I had this great idea, like, I should go to that vineyard. Well, how come I've never been to a vineyard? Wouldn't that be great to go to a vineyard? The sun would be shining, I'd be walking around, and I'm even walking around with a glass of wine. And I'd be having a good old time. I could even tell you what I'd be wearing. I'd be wearing like a white linen dress, and it'd be flowing, and it would be awesome. And my sponsor says to me, you can't do that, because at the end of that vineyard, your dress would be brown, and you'd be drunk, and you would have fallen on your face. And that's the truth. I forget that stuff, though, if I'm not coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and talking to other women in the program. And these are the things I have to learn about myself so that I know how to take care of myself. So we're going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm starting to feel really good. And we do the fourth step, and I do my fifth step. And the woman that sat and listened to me for 8 hours, like, just dump junk, you know. These people in Alcoholics Anonymous are selfless, and I'm selfish. But I'm doing what you're telling me to do, and I'm starting to feel better. And it's not God's grace that I can write down on a piece of paper all the wrongs you have done me or anybody else, right? I got to get down to the work. I got to actually start doing things differently so I can, you know, live a better life. And I'll never forget, after my fifth step, my sponsor called me up and she wanted to know how I felt. How are you feeling? And for the first time in my life, I felt like everything was going to be okay. So we just continued through the steps. And, you know, I had to do a really hard thing. I had to make amends, and that included my ex-husband, which was really, really kind of hard for me because, I don't know, maybe someone else can relate to this. Like, he was at fault for everything. You know, our marriage sucked because of him. Everything was his fault. And I had to make an amends to him. And I, you know, just come into meetings and I'm listening and I start to hear that, in order for me to make a, you know, proper amends to him, that it really has to mean something to me. And then what I realize is that in order for it to mean anything to me, I have to have compassion for him. And then I start to think to myself, oh my gosh, I have to have compassion for him. That means I have to love him. Someplace within me, I have to love him. And I was able to call him up and tell him that I thought he was doing a great job with his children and then apologize for... you know, basically lying to him for 22 years. And today I don't want to say we're friends, but you know, we can deal with each other today and we do. One of the other things that I had to deal with, which was really hard for me when, I was drinking was, so I stopped drinking. And I got into a relationship with this guy, and I know it now. I didn't know it then. You know, today I understand that I'm powerless over everything. It's not just alcohol. But I got involved in this relationship with this guy, and I got addicted to him. And during that addiction, I developed a real bad resentment towards my son, my oldest son. I hated him. It kills me to say that, but I did. That's my truth, and I try really hard to speak my truth because I continue to learn about myself through the honest words of other alcoholics, and maybe somebody else out there hated their children and, you know, can't say it or won't say it, and if I say it, it might, you know, heal them in some way. So I hated him, and I was not a good mother. My son, at the age of 8, was the New Jersey State reigning champ in golf, and he got to go to the Worlds. And every chance I got, I told that kid that he would never amount to anything, that he was, you know, no good, you're not that good at golf. And so here he is, he's 16. And he's letting me know that he doesn't value the crap that comes out of my mouth. And I'm looking at him and you know, I'm hearing this and I'm understanding this. And I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I understand today that somewhere within me, I did have an intense desire to be, like I did want to be his mother. And that sort of like developed within me, and I did want to love him, and I wanted him to want me as his mother. But for 4 years, he wouldn't let me have anything to do with him. And every time I talked to that kid, I had to have this mantra going on in my head, like, I'm your mother, I love you unconditionally, I'm your mother. I'm your mother, I love you unconditionally, I'm your mother. I didn't love him, but I wanted to love him. And I know through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it brought me to this place of love for him. And today, he permits me to participate in his life. Last week, he was trying to qualify for the Canadian tour. He got a golf scholarship to Rutgers University. We didn't have to pay a penny for him to, that's how good he was. That's how good he was in golf. Despite the crap that came out of my mouth, he went on and you know, is a good golfer. And last week, he was in a golf tournament, and he's trying to qualify for the Canadian tour, and we rented a house, and it was me, my son Lewis, and his father, all under one roof. And I thank Alcoholics Anonymous that I could actually show up as his mother in that moment. It was difficult. It was not easy. It was really difficult. But the amazing thing about that is that it was a four-day golf tournament, and it started on Tuesday. So on Tuesday, we're walking, and there's this older gentleman there. He had a child late in life, I know, because we developed a relationship and we were talking. And he said something, and I said to him, "Are you a friend of Bill W?" And he said, "Yes, I have 41 years. So for the first 2 days of the golf tournament, I got to walk around the golf course with a guy that had 41 years of sobriety, and he wanted to take care of me. Like, he wanted to hear about what was going on with me, how's being in that house with Jeff, so on and so forth. And, you know, it's amazing to me how Alcoholics Anonymous just inserts itself into my life today. I didn't pray to God that I get to walk around a golf course with somebody else that's sober so that I have someone that I can dump my crap on. You know, it just happened. And, Friday I went to a meeting and, sitting there and I'm listening to all these people speak. And the topic was about how if you don't go to alcohol, you know, if you don't stay connected, how you're going to relapse. And I get done from the meeting, and I turn my phone on, and there's a message from another woman, and it says, "Call me as soon as you can." And I call her up, and she tells me that one of my sponsees, she overdosed. And but she happened to be with a nurse, and that person was doing CPR until the emergency people got there, and they Narcanned her twice. And they took her to the emergency room. And in that moment, I'm like crying. Like, I'm crying. I'm crying for her, but I'm also crying for myself because I don't understand. Like, why is it today that I'm standing here sober, 8 years sober, do not have the desire to drink or do drugs? She had 3 years. I want to act like I don't know. But I do, like, I do know. On the most basic, you know, I understand that I'm staying connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor. I help others. I stay connected. And I'm so thankful for the women that I do sponsor today because they keep me in. Like, they call me up. They bring the program to me whether I want it or not. And one of the girls in the program actually started a group chat. Some people don't like it, but I love it. I get to hear from every one of them in the morning, and I respond to just about every one of them. It keeps me connected. It keeps me in the program. It keeps me thinking about the program. Some people complain about how positive we're being. but I don't know. I love it. Like, I absolutely love it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love participating in, you know, how it works. It keeps me, you know, it keeps me clean and sober. And I'm going to stand up here in front of you and I'm going to tell you that I'm not delusional about, like, what my role is in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't even know. I have like 8 or 9 sponsees. I had a sponsee come to my house. This is also amazing to me. Like, my guy's in landscape and nursery. So I get him for 3 months he doesn't have anything to do, and then he goes to work. And when he goes to work, he goes to work 6 days a week. And it used to be early on that I didn't know what to do with myself. I would go into depression. I have actually gone to his place of business and stood there and cried in front of him. I don't know what to do. I don't do that today. Today, I don't do that. My 8 years has brought me to this place of, you know, I know how to spend time with myself. Plus, the other really cool thing is the first day that he had to go to work, I had three different sponsees that called me and said, could you spend time with me? One girl I hadn't even heard from in 6 months. So the first one that comes into my house says to me, how many sponsees do you have? And I said, I don't know. And I look at her and I say, oh, this is important to you. And she said, yes, it is. And I said, okay, let's write them all down. So she's naming off all the girls that she thinks I sponsor. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever the number is, okay. And she said to me, I need to know that you're going to be emotionally available for me when I need you. And I just looked at her and I said, oh. I said, that's not how it works. And I remember calling my first sponsor, and she'd be in tears dealing with something, and I'd say, Jewel, what's wrong? And she would say, I made a bad decision, and now I'm sitting in it. So, like, I knew, because of her, that my job was not to be emotionally available for someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I also know that their sobriety doesn't lay in any of the words that come out of my mouth. It's in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we get to go through the steps together, and we get to practice. That's all. We get to practice the program of Alcoholics Anonymous together to the best of our ability. That's how they stay sober, and that's how I stay sober. And so I get it. Like, I'm not keeping anybody sober. My sponsor's not keeping me sober. I try really hard to operate from a platform of willingness, because when I do, like, many doors are open for me. There was something I wanted to say, and I can't remember what it was, so I'll just keep on babbling about something else. What time is it? 8:44. Oh, here's the story. It just came to me. So one day I'm coming out of Ringo's Freedom Through Acceptance. And there's a girl there that I sponsor. And this beautiful girl, like, I still sponsor her. She still lets me sponsor her. But for probably the first 6 months of our relationship, I did not call her Amanda. Her name is Amanda. I called her Lauren. She would correct me every single time. And I would say, I'm sorry. I just can't remember. And so I come out, and she's talking to another girl, and Amanda goes, Suzanne, I have to tell you something. And I say, what, honey? And she said, so-and-so said, you don't like her. And I said, yes, I do. I love her. And then I said, who is she? I don't even know who she is. And she told me who she was. And this other person standing there goes, I can't ever imagine Suzanne not liking somebody or not being kind to someone. My sponsee says, I can. And in that moment, I thought to myself, oh, yeah, like, yeah, I'm doing something right. This woman knows who I am. Like, I'm not being fake with her. She knows exactly who I am. She knows I'm human. She knows that, you know, there's probably people I don't like, and I'm not always nice. And the girl that told Amanda that she thought I didn't like her, I'm now her sponsor. And we're going through the steps together, because that's what we do. And I feel like I don't have much else to say other than I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so thankful to be standing here sober in front of everybody here. Thank you so much for being here so that I have another chance of being sober. And, you know, I get to gain an understanding that as long as I walk in honesty with another alcoholic and a power greater than me, I have a half a chance of staying sober today. Thank you so much for letting me share.